All right. That was, by the way, we snuck in one tune there from Newtown, and that was our fellow DJ, Terry Poirier, singing My Little Angelita. Terry just tears that one up. And on the phone, right as rain, right here we have Phil Ledbetter. Say hello, Phil.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be with you.
Phil and I were chatting during that last song, and I told him what I told the listeners when we started out today around 2 o'clock, that when I was making up this show, when we were talking about coming, I thought, I'll just put like a bit and piece of Phil from this band and that album. And that, man, I'd have been next week still trying to just get one from each little project you've put out there. There's so much good stuff out there.
Well, I appreciate it. I've been lucky to be part of some good bands. I mean, I played with some before, but mainly I always say starting with J.D. Crow. I had two albums there, and then had the band Wildfire. We had three albums there, so that brings us to five. And then Grass Down, while I was with them, we had a couple of more, I guess, which would give us seven. Then I got two solo albums.
Yeah.
And getting ready to start on a couple of more albums. I'm going to be doing, looks like maybe two at the same time, but with totally different ideas.
Wow. Okay. Well, we won't ask you if you want to keep that stuff, you know, undercover while it's in project mode. We'll just let that go there. Are you going to run for president again?
Well, I'll tell you what I am doing. I mean, one of the records I'm going to do is, you know, most people know I've been sick for a while. I was diagnosed with cancer, which is a Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Phil, do you mind if we talk about that just a bit and we'll get back to the music? Okay.
No, tell them what happened.
Tell them what happened, because this was pretty amazing.
Well, 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with this, April of 2011. And anyway, during that time, which I'll get back to this too, but during the time, I mean, I had got where I couldn't pick anymore or anything, and I said, you know, if I can get myself well again, I'm going to do another album, and I'm going to do something that I want to do. I want to do something that's got songs on that I've always wanted, people I've always wanted, and, you know, a lot of it that I plan on doing on that won't necessarily be all bluegrass. So what I'm doing is I'm doing a bluegrass album, similar to the slide effects I've done, a lot of bluegrass songs and everything, and then I'm doing a specialty album that's going to have a lot of different players on it, not only from bluegrass, but from country and stuff, and it's just going to be what I'd say an album of celebration. That's what I wanted to do. And it's a lot of people that have inspired me to get well, and people's music I've always liked. So, but anyway, back to where we were. I was out for 2 years. I played my last show in 2011 at the Joe Val Festival and got sick right after that. And what's weird is that was the last place I played professionally, and I just got to play there again 2 weeks ago. Never thought I'd be back there, but
wow.
This time I played cancer-free, and it was 2 years, so it was neat to go back to where I'd finished and start a new page.
That's kind of fitting the way that worked out like that. Kind of amazing if you think about it.
It really is. The last show I played with Whites. I've been playing with them for nearly 2 years when I left Grasstown, and when I was recovering, what I went through, I've been through, my cancer had really, it was supposed to be one that was supposed to be kind of easy to take care of. It had a small rate of people that didn't do good with it, and I thought, well, that's pretty good. I'll be in that 93% that does good, and I was totally wrong. I was in that that other percent that didn't do good, and I had 6 months of chemo, which was pretty straight, and I came out of that in 2011 in September, and thought I was going to be doing pretty good, thought I'd be in remission, and no, it wasn't. It hadn't really responded that much, but it hadn't went any farther. So there was a new experimental drug that came out that was approved by the FDA, and it was supposed to be the very best thing for what I had, and it had just been developed in September, so I thought, wow, this is just perfect timing, you know. It's been released 2 weeks, and the drug company gave it to me for free to write a report on it, how well it was doing. and it was like $8,000 a dose, and they gave it to me. So I felt, you know, just really lucky to get that. And what was weird, I had, you're supposed to do 3 rounds and then a scan, and my doctor chose to do, since it was new with him, he chose to do 2 rounds and a scan, and we're lucky he did, because I went back and had another scan, and my cancer had spread everywhere. It had went to pretty much every lymph node I had, my legs, my arms, my neck, my chest, my stomach. It was everywhere. And they said that this new drug on me acted like fertilizer almost. It had just really made the cancer go crazy.
Wow.
So my doctor, we wanted to do a stem cell, because a stem cell is one of the sure ways to get cured from this. And when I went back to my stem cell doctor, he says, there ain't no way we can do this. Your cancer's out of control. And see, we were planning on doing a stem cell in October of 2011. Well, I wound up, got sent to Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt wrote me up some new chemo medicines. It really got out of hand in February of 2012. That's when it was really to the point that I was trying to figure out, you know, what to tell my family as far as things of mine to take care of, and who I wanted to have this and who I wanted to have that. It had got to that point. And I went to Vanderbilt and met a doctor from India. And she was a young doctor and probably in her 30s. And when she saw me, she looked at my scans, and she really wasn't too scared of it. She said she had saw stuff like this before. And she gave me medicine, a new chemo that was pretty rough, but it totally put me in remission. And at that time, in August the 28th, I went into the hospital and got a stem cell transplant, which for those of you who aren't familiar, they go in and they take brand new baby blood cells from your bone marrow. And they have to do about a million of them. And my first day, I put out 11 million that they were able to get. So I only had to have one day of harvesting stem cells. So they froze those and put me in the hospital. I was in for 35 days, and they gave me, the consent I signed said possible lethal doses of chemo. But I knew it was going to be lethal if I didn't have this, but it was going to get me. So anyway, we did this. I had the chemo. They put my stem cells back in. September the 10th, I went 2 weeks later on a 1 mile cancer lymphoma walk. This is from a guy that just 3 weeks earlier, I couldn't even get out of bed.
That's amazing.
I had this walk, finished it, joined up with Dellan Bradley another week later as a dope rope player. And it was funny because he hired me, and I said, Dellan, I've not played in 2 years. I don't know if I can do this anymore. And Dellan, being who she is, she says, honey, I trust you're going to be just fine. I'm not worried about you.
Wow.
I know you're going to do it. So that gave me incentive, and I got practicing. And to make a long story short, I've been out playing with Forever Weekend. And my last cancer scan in December showed I'm 100% cancer-free.
Yeah.
So I'm well.
Phil, we love you, man.
Oh, thanks, buddy. It's mutual. It is mutual.
We got. You know how we do this on Worldwide Bluegrass? They have a chat room where people enter and talk about stuff, and there are people in there that are going to make me say, Sean McCormick and Paula Breedlove, you're their hero, and they love you. Everybody does, but these in particular, they want to make sure that I say that I can't always get over there and type, but I can see what they're saying. And,
they're some of my very best friends, and I'm going to lie if I say I saw Paula. Paula wrote some really good tunes for this new album that Steve Gulley produced called God Didn't Choose Sides on Rural Rhythm. And I was part of the performance band on that, not on the album, but I was on the performing band. And we did a performance the week before at LMU at the Abraham Lincoln Library. And Paula was up there, and somehow in the shuffle I missed her. But I just think the world of her and her husband. They're just great people and great writers.
Man, this is inspiring. Now, you know, you, and I'll say Facebook, because I don't know where, what other places you were doing this, but, and by the way, if you just tuned in, this is Phil Ledbetter on the phone. We're just talking a little about what he's been through, but Phil, almost from the day or so that this happened, the diagnosis, you were public right away. And what was your thinking on that?
Well, I'll tell you what I thought about. I knew at that time, it's kind of funny how things work. I mean, I've always been religious and been in the family that we were, you know, very strong believers in God, and knew that life here, you know, and I've always thought everybody's got their different ideas, but I never did think it ended here. And I knew that even though that there was life afterwards, that I wanted to spend a little bit more time here with my family. I wasn't ready to leave my grandkids. I had 2 and 3 at the time, my son and my wife. And I immediately decided, well, the best way, you know, I think, if it's anything to help me, is through prayer. And I thought, how better to get people praying for you than, you know, you could go to your church and ask a few friends, or you could hit Facebook. And on Facebook, I was maxed out at the time, which they max you at 5,000 people. And I thought, well, you know, if I can have just a portion of those people praying for me.
Yeah.
And it went from one person here going to their church and then each member going to their friends. You realize one person praying for you turns into a bunch. And I would have emails every morning. I mean, I would be so stacked with emails of people saying, you know, hey, we had prayer for you today. Here in Italy, we just prayed for you. I'm in Rome, or we're in China, we're in Japan. I was realized, you know, I was being covered with prayer even when I was asleep.
Yeah, man. And you were global.
It was awesome. And I told people, to each his own. You know, some people choose to be private about things, and I understand that. But I basically came and I said, well, look, you know, I'm not ashamed or going to deny, you know, that I know who God is, and I'm going to ask him to help me, but I'm needing all you guys to ask him with me. And for some reason, I mean, I look around, I met so many people during my illness. The bad thing about having cancer is you meet so many people who are sick, and you make new friendships with people that just aren't going to be around very long.
Uh-huh.
And it's good and bad, because some of the best people you would ever meet are some of the ones who are sick, but you just know they're not going to make it. And, you know, I looked so many times at some of the people that were just such good people that I would see when I would have chemo infusion, and then the next week I would come in and their chair would be empty, and they would say, hey, you know, they passed away this week. And I went to more funerals during the time that I was getting chemo than I ever have in my life. But, you know, the thing about it is I always asked, you know, why was I the one to be able to get well and survive this? And these people not. But I'm starting to understand, because I've been talking to a lot of people that come to me now, knowing that I've had this, that come to me that have a family member or even themselves. And I talked to a friend of mine a few minutes ago. His mom was just diagnosed. And we talked, and she wants to call me and talk to me. Talked to Chris Wade last night, who played banjo with Marty Rabin. And we've talked some of the time he was diagnosed to his healing, which he was healed 2 days ago. And it's just, you know, I think being able to talk to people and tell them, you know, hey, look, this is what I did. This is what got me well. It may not be what you want to do, but I just want to let you know that I'm well, and this is what got me well. And I still feel like it was a combination of great doctors and great medicines. And the most important thing on top of it was just the power of prayer. And my whole medical team were good people too. They would pray with me and stuff before they would do procedures. And, you know,
and Phil,
no matter
you,
what, what you believe, that's pretty powerful.
Well, and over that too, and not above anything you've mentioned, not in priorities, but you always had, through the whole thing that I saw, just a great attitude.
Well, it's back to my infusion when I would go to be infused. I mean, I was the first one at infusion lab. I would get there at 7:30 in the morning. They opened at 8. They would have me hooked up, ready to run. I would have, I got more drugs than anybody. I got 5 different chemos each day.
Wow.
And I was the first one in there that was hooked up at 8 in the morning. I was the last one unhooked at the end of the day because most people had, you know, 2 or 3. I would go from 8 in the morning to about 4:30 for my chemo days. But I would look and I would see people all around me in there that were just really sick and would be throwing up and stuff, and I never did. And one thing, I guess, I was a nurse. One of my last jobs as a nurse was I worked on a cancer floor. And I kind of knew about, you know, tricks. We used to tell patients how not to get sick and things to help. And I always tried to do that with myself, but I always tried to tell the patients in there, too, little tricks that helped me. And it was kind of funny. There was not that I got them any better, but my advice, there was a lot less throwing up as time went on in there because I would show people little things I would do to keep me from getting sick. And I was just real positive through all this because I saw, well, first of all, I knew positive attitude is a trick to getting well, never giving up. But the second thing is I looked around me at the people in there, and I realized how fortunate I was to still be able to walk in there and get my chemo, where some of these people was coming in wheelchairs or on stretchers. And I just, even at my very worst, I just always counted my blessings and still never, never felt to be thankful for a pretty day when I would go in. I mean, I would go into chemo and the sun would be out, and I'd still say, wow, what a beautiful day here, even though I wouldn't see any of it because I'd be in there all day.
Wow.
I was just thankful I got to be thankful for what a lot of people think are small things, but they're not small, they're huge.
Every day.
Yeah, every day. That's right.
Every single day is a gift.
But collectively, some way or another, I got all through this, and it just wasn't my time, and I'm going to do scans for the rest of my life, but hey, I can live with that. I mean, with what I've been through, if I can't go in and lay on a table every 3 to 4 months and get a scan, then, that's the least I can do. Mm-hmm. But I've just had such good friends and in the bluegrass community that came forward when I was sick and just were there for us. And, one of my plans is, if I'm still here, which, you know, here I am, I'm going to do everything I can to give back and hopefully, help someone else that was in the same situation as I was.
You know, Phil, when you were going through this and people would, you would make like whatever day, whatever couple of days, you would kind of update your status there. And I'm really talking about the Facebook thing that I saw regularly. And no matter what, I'll just tell the people listening, in case you didn't see this happening, because I did, and I watched it, and I would always, you know, I would try to respond like everybody was positive response, that if it was a time to prayer, we'd pray. Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, though, folks. What Phil always did was he acknowledged every response that he got.
I tried to do that. I tried to do that, and I would go, it was funny, there was a lot of times, now my son, right before I had really turned and got bad, he had bought me an iPad, and it got where I would take that to my chemo sessions, I mean, 8.5 hours hooked up, and there was times there that I was writing people back, basically getting chemo.
Wow.
I mean, that was like a regular thing that I would do, because I couldn't stay on top of it, but I was just as thankful for somebody that I didn't know, that I'd never met or whatever, sending me an email as I was, you know, to get one from Ricky Skaggs or whoever. It was the same to me because those those people, their prayers meant just as much as anyone else's to me. And so I always tried to make it a point, and I told people, I mean, I was getting things with sometimes 400 and 500 comments.
Yeah.
And I told people, I said, if I can't write you back, I promise you I'm reading all of them. And the way I'll mark them is I'll hit like.
That's
let
right.
You know that I've read them.
That's right.
And I never missed reading a comment. I mean, I read them even with my stem cell on days I couldn't really hardly open my eyes. I made sure for that.
Wow.
And that meant a lot.
Well, buddy, I'm telling you, it's we are so thrilled for everything that you're doing. The fact that, and you know, when I just so people listening, when I was contacting Phil about being on, I thought, well, we'll talk about music, which of course is your life, but we'll talk about your life too if you want to. And it was all up to you, and you wanted to bring everybody up to date in case they didn't know what was going on. And I do appreciate your forthrightness on that.
Well, hey, this is part of my life now. It's like before, you know, I was a musician and you know everything else, daddy, husband, friend, but you know I've been affected with this now, so I have, this is a part of my life, and even though it's gone, and hopefully it will stay gone, I feel the need to, you know, first of all, for my friends, but the most important thing I worried about with everything is I didn't want my friends to really think, because what would happen if I went 2 or 3 days without posting, I'd get hundreds of private messages, are you okay, are you okay,
yeah.
Are you okay? And I never wanted my friends to be worried about me. I didn't want anybody's day. Like, I had a friend that called me one day and said, hey, I had my boat loaded up, was getting ready to go fishing yesterday, and thought about you and everything, and knew what was going on, and said I went back in my house and didn't go fishing. Well, I didn't want people to do that. I wanted people to live, because the whole plan was when I got well, I was going to, and I did, and I am, and you know I'm gonna live every day, and that's what you've got. You know, that's what you got to do, because like we said, you're not promised one, and I think with a lot of my comments and posts too, I never really started posting to just be on there every day, but I realized when I quit posting, I had people wondering how I was doing, people's
yeah.
worried. But I just tried to make it an ongoing thing, and I did, and it, you know, I'd have people a lot tell me that something I told them had motivated them in something else they were doing, or maybe they got a new job and hated going in, but
yeah, not just in a medical situation. You were getting responses that, hey, you're helping me get through tough times, cancer
yeah.
or no.
Yeah, and especially the way things have been. I mean, I had a lot of people that would send me things like, you know, the economy's so bad, we've not been playing music very much, and I've been, you know, all upset about that, but I realize you haven't had to play in a year and a half, and I'm at least getting to play every other week. And so they say, you know, I've counted my blessings. Or I'll have people, you know, say, hey, you know, it's been tough at work or whatever, but, you know, I realize some things that you say, things, you know, there's a lot of people that would be happy just to be able to go to work and stand up for 8 hours and to be able to do that.
Wow.
And, you know, there were so many people I had that was in my infusion groups that had been people with really good backgrounds. I mean, we had everything from people who were doctors that had got hit by cancer. As a matter of fact, my own doctor got diagnosed the same day I did. It was really weird. He called me in to tell me I had cancer, and he said, well, me and you'll be going through it together. And I said, well, I hope so, because you're my doctor. And he said, no, I don't mean that. I said, I got diagnosed this morning.
Oh, jeepers.
You know, you see those people that like him and everybody else, and then all of a sudden they're getting infusion and getting chemo just like you, and you realize no matter who people are, whether millionaires or whatever, that are, you know, poor people, if they get cancer, that's kind of, you know, where they're all going to end up is, I mean, more than likely getting chemo. So you're in there with people that worked every day, and all of a sudden they can't work anymore. Or you run in there with people that, you know, that worked, let's say maybe worked in a factory, and most people talk about, I hate the factory job, but there was people in there that worked at factory that said, well, I wish I could just get well enough to go back to my old job. I never will, you know, take that for granted again.
Wow.
And it was just an eye-opening thing.
Phil Ledbetter, man, you were an inspiration. You continue. You were through music, first of all. And I don't know if people, I would go to IBMA as much as I could and would go see like these little Dobro sessions. And just so you all know, too, this is Phil the way he is all the time. When Phil was winning awards after award after award, and he'd be on stage with some up-and-comers and some talented guys, the most humble musician I've ever seen. He would be like, this is the guy you need to listen to. And I'm thinking, that the guy, Phil Ledbetter, is the guy. And he would always defer to everybody on the panel. This is every time I saw you down there, Phil, this is what you were doing, just constantly, you know, shining the light on somebody else.
I'll tell you what, I've just been, you know, I've been treated real good, and I've been just real lucky and played with some really good people. I mean, J.D. Crow opened so many doors up for me and everything. And, you know, I was with him 11 years, and I watched how he carried himself for a long time. And that was a big part of it. He didn't get caught up in it. I mean, he'd go to J.D.'s house. One of the first things that I remember when I went to his house, we went up, and I knew he had won a Grammy. And I said, where's your Grammy? He said, I don't know, it's in a box, I think, in the garage, or it's on the shelf or something. And he didn't have everything out there flashing it, saying, hey, this is me, and this is what I did. I mean, he played banjo on weekends, and the minute he left the stage and closed the door, he was J.D. Crow. He wasn't the banjo picker.
Yeah.
He was the guy that wanted to talk about his kids, or talk about his cars, or whatever, you know, And I learned a lot from him just being that. But, you know, you realize, and I realized when I was sick too, anything you win or anything you do, there's none of that stuff you take with you, and it don't really matter, you know. You've only got that stuff while you're here and that. I mean, it's all good for your family to say, you know, well, they did this or that, but that's, you know, that's about it.
Yeah.
You have to really look at it that way, and you have to go out every time and just play the best you can and do the best you can and try to be a good influence to people and don't do anything. Keep people seeing you in a good light, where, you know, when you're out playing, you're working because you're paid. If you're out working, you know, you're on the job and you owe it to people to do your best and to be a good representative of the music. And that's what I've always tried to do. I've always been for the underdogs.
Buddy, let me just tell you this. There are people in this chat room here that are screaming at me, typing, telling me things to say to you. And, of course, Paul is out there telling everyone, he's Uncle Phil. And I've always referred to you as Unc, too, sometimes. And honestly, I don't know why. I just did, because that's on Bluegrass L and all those other servers. It was Uncle Phil. So Paul is in here just going crazy, thanking you and talking about you.
Well, that's really nice. You know, I picked that name up years ago. I was a rehab nurse at a hospital, a head injury hospital, and there was a young boy on our floor that had been in a car wreck. He was like 12 or 13, and he's a little boy from Alabama. It was real funny, but he had just started waking up out of his coma, and he had heard people talking to me when he was in a coma. He couldn't respond, but it's surprising what people can hear. And he knew my name, and when he woke up, he knew my name, and he called me, you know, Phil, and then he started calling me Uncle Phil.
Oh.
And then it became a thing where he said, well, there's my Uncle Phil. So that's kind of where that happened.
I never knew that. I never understood where that came from. And then from there, it launched your presidential campaign.
Yeah, it did in 2000. So it's kind of funny. That's where it came from, a little 14-year-old
I'll be darned.
Boy. And I hope he's doing good. He was headed toward doing good when I last saw him in probably 1989, something like that. So that's how long that's been.
Here's a joke question. Artie Werner is in the chat room, and he's saying, is Phil still a UT fan? I thought, come on.
Of course. tell him if you don't believe me, he needs to come over and look at my room.
It's all orange.
I always will be, because I grew up in this town, and it's like every time I go out my door or something, at least every day I pass, you know, if not every day, every other day, the stadium or something. So it's kind of hard not to be. This is a football town. It's kind of like living in, you know, in Nashville and not being a music fan, I guess. It's these people around here, that's what they live and breathe, and it's hard not to get caught up in it. And you know what's funny is when I was in the hospital getting my stem cell, I was in for like a total of the pre-testing all for nearly 33 days. And off the left side of the hospital, you could see the stadium. And off the right side, you couldn't. And, you know, any good view after 33 days is terrible. I don't care if you're looking at the ocean.
Was that the stem cell? Was that when you were in for the stem cell process?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. And Tennessee played Florida, and it was funny. I could hear the stadium from the other side, but I couldn't see it. And that was one of the days I was really feeling bad. And I remember looking out my window and seeing the blimp fly over, but not get over far enough. It just kind of, I saw the nose and saw him turn around and head back, and I thought, wow, over here I can't even get a good glimpse of the blimp. And it was kind of one of them days that, you know, I said, I got to get well because I want to get back and go to games and do the things I used to do.
And root on the big orange. You know, you got Butch Jones now. He's from UC, which is just across the river from where. He's a good coach.
I know he is. We hated to take him from you guys. I mean, Dwight McCall's done. with American Drive.
Yeah, sure.
And Dwight and Ricky, a lot of people don't realize, but we played together for a long time with JD, and then Dwight and Ricky left and then came back after I left later on, and that's when the new band came. It's American Drive now.
Yeah.
And Dwight called me today, or didn't call me, he's on Facebook complaining about Butch being gone. And I know how Dwight is, so when I saw Dwight complaining, I knew then, hey, Butch must be a really good coach because Dwight would be, you know, going on like this about him. So I said, do you want him back? And he said, heck yeah. He said, I want him back. And I said, well, you can't have him. And everybody down here really likes him. I always hate it for the town where people lose their coach, but we really needed one bad. We were in a bad spot, and he's really brought us some spark here, and I know what he can do.
He did a lot for UC, which is, you know, I'm right in Kentucky where I've always lived, but he did a lot for that school, and he's a real low-key guy, but he's all football. He's all business. He's not he's not going to entertain you and tell jokes at a press conference, but you're going to like it. You're going to like it.
Well, that's what we know, and I had followed him a little because I always liked, you know, I always liked Cincinnati. And it's funny, you get to liking teams and stuff because of people you're in the bands with, people you normally wouldn't pay attention to. It's just like, you know, Kentucky and everything. I mean, JD was from there, Kirk was from there. So I couldn't help, but when we were out of town, I got to know all the players on all the teams and stuff. And then Dwight being up the road, Cincinnati was on, I'd watch them play. And then, you know, like with Robert, I got when, you know, West Virginia was on, I would watch them. So it's funny, just your ties with friends, you kind of, you know, watch teams play to kind of support them a little bit.
Yeah. Well, listen, Phil, this has just been, by the way, and I know you're back playing full-time because I looked at your schedule before you came on. You're a busy man with that Dober. You've picked up right where you were. You might be busier than you ever were. I don't know.
Well, I think I am. It's funny because Steve Gulley told me he thought that I know better. It's too young, too early in time. But he said he thinks I'm playing better. And I know I'm not playing better yet because my mechanics ain't down. But he said that he thinks I'm hearing stuff different. And I really think I am. I've noticed a difference in my attack and approach. And I'm having more fun playing. And I think what it is, I think it's just, you know, I think I'm back where I really like doing it again. I mean, you can do things for just the routine where it just becomes sterile. I don't think it's like that no more. Mm. And then Dale Ann's been one of my favorites forever.
She's a sweetheart.
She is a good person. See, me and Steve Gulley were supposed to play with her several years back, and we played at IBMA with her, and then about a week later, we got the opportunity to start Grasstown, so we did that. So here we went that direction a while, and I left Grasstown and played with the Whites, and Steve, he left Grasstown about a year later, and he kept telling me, he said, as soon as you're well, we want you to play with us, and that gave me a lot of incentive. But with Dale Ann, it's fun. It fits the dobro real good. And being back picked with Steve, and then another one of my friends, Greg Hodge, plays in a band. And I've known Steve and Greg. I've known Steve since I was 11. I've known Greg since I was 12. Mm. So there's just no, you know, there's not going to be any surprises those guys are going to throw me, or that I say, wow, I wish I'd known this before I started picking with you. We're just, it's just the most comfortable situation I've ever been in. And it's, I'm glad I got to do this so I could, you know, realize that it can be fun again.
Phil, let me make a suggestion to you. And I know you're a wonderful musician. You're busy and you're back enjoying the music. But will you take some time, and maybe you're doing that today, but maybe this can be the beginning of take some time to maybe do some inspirational speaking. And I don't mean do it every night, but you're doing it now, and I'm telling you what, man, it's well, this is valuable.
I have thought about that, and I've had people ask me about that, and that may be something that I do. I mean, I'm already used to being out to doing what I do, you know, so it's nothing new to me there. But, you know, I think sometimes it's just like when I was sick, There was people I would talk to, and it would usually be my nurses or somebody. I mean, I had one of my nurses, this shows you something, took care of me for about three months. She was my main nurse, took care of me about 3 months. And then one of the other nurses got talking to me about her and said, well, you know, she's got cancer too. Well, I didn't know that. Here was a woman that was taking care of me that would be off every Friday so she could get chemo herself. And then try to recover Saturday and Sunday and be back at work on Monday. And that's back to like what we talked about, how you can push yourself to do things you didn't know you could do. She was doing it every week. But just talking to her and seeing what she would do, and people that would come in, you know, down there, they were, you know, people like that inspire you to get well and stuff. And you know, I did a lot of reading and things, and I also found out that, you know, I have, my dad died at 80 with cancer. He was 71, and my brother died of cancer in 66. He just turned 22 years old. And, you know, when I first got diagnosed, you hear all this, you know, stuff, that you've always been scared of cancer. But, you know, it's changed so much because, you know, there used to not be people who were survivors walking around. Everybody that got cancer died. It was just kind of the way it worked. And they just got so much new stuff now that they can do. And 3 weeks after I came out of my stem cell doctor had a big party called a stem celebration. And I went to that, and there was over 100 and something people there, and they all had on name tags, and it showed under their name how many years they were cancer-free that had stem cells. And there was a lot of them that had been cancer-free for 15-plus years. And, you know, when you start seeing people like that, that's more motivating than anybody saying anything to you. That's you can get motivated just by reading a name tag when you see somebody's been around 15 years and they look great and don't look like they've ever been sick.
Well, here's what I predict for you, Phil. I don't think that you're necessarily going to be, you know, appearing on stage as a motivational speaker, but I think you're going to, and you could, but I think you're going to do exactly what you're doing now, is when it comes up, you're going to take the time to be very sincere and explain it all and say the same things, whether it's one person or a crowd of people that may be incidental to a concert that you've done, maybe afterwards, you know, would the traditional shake and howdy time. I think you're going to find yourself doing that a lot.
That's true. When we were in Florida, I had a lot of people. Me and Steve took a little mini tour my first time out in Florida, and I had a lot of people coming up talking to me then, you know, that had somebody that was diagnosed or something. And, you know, sometimes it's just taking time to talk to people, because I was really glad that people took time, you know, to talk to me and tell me things that worked for them. And, you know, and everybody's in different agreements on stuff. I mean, I had people tell me, you know, and I know they wanted to help, but they would say, well, you know, you need to try this diet here. This diet will help. It cures cancer. Try it for 6 months. And it's like, I would say, well, you know, I don't have 6 months to do it. I just can't. So I had to get on the internet and look and then start talking to people that had what I had to see what was what had cured them. Because I didn't care what it was. I didn't care if it was eating asphalt or
hedge apples
or having rocks every day for lunch. If it got them well, I was going to do it.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter. And there were so many people, like with chemo, said, oh, you don't want that. I've had people tell me, I've got somebody that I want to call you that can tell you some horror stories about that stuff. Well, I didn't want to hear no horror stories. I wanted to hear, you know, things that would give me some hope and stuff. And I kind of, that way I stayed away from negative stuff and back to, you know, talking to people and stuff. Anytime anybody would come up and talk to me, I would never really tell people how bad it was at some of the times I had, but I would let them know that, hey, you know, it does get better, and here, you know, I am, and I'm better. And it just, you know, that's the main thing, is I didn't ever want to scare anybody off from, you know, saying, well, you know, I've got cancer, but it, you know, I don't think as bad as the cancer is, the treatment's worse. And I don't want people, you know, I didn't want anybody to know that. And my doctor functioned like that, too. He told me when I went for the stem cell, I asked him how bad it would be. And he said, well, you've already had some of these chemo drugs. It'll be a little bit worse. Well, once I got in and he gave me all the medicine, then he laughed and said, we gave you more medicine in 3 days than you had in like 6 months.
Oh, wow.
We put it all together. But he said, it wasn't going to do you no good to sit and worry about it. I made sure you had everything you needed, and the nurses was here taking care of you, and I knew that you could handle it, or I wouldn't have done it. And, you know, sometimes you just need to know, you know, the facts on stuff, but you don't always have to be too explicit in details where you scare people off. And that's what I want to do, is just try to keep people inspired that they, you know, can get better. And for every bad day you have, you know, you'll have a good day, and eventually they'll get to be more good days, and eventually they'll be all good days.
Well, Phil, you have absolutely, and again, if you're just tuning in, we've been talking to Phil Ledbetter about his music, but also about his life, which is something that he wants to discuss. And let me just say, I think I speak for everybody that's tuned in. You've been an absolute blessing for everyone who's been listening and participating today. And,
well, thank you.
And, man, we appreciate it so much. And
well, I appreciate you, and I appreciate you, you know, not only always checking on me and everything, but continuing to play music and keeping people knowing who I was and everything. And it was, you know, it's kind of funny. It's even though I started back, a lot of people said, oh, it's going to kind of be like starting over again, but I didn't think it would be, and it's not been. It's just like, well, it's been just like a bluegrass musician. I had 2 years I couldn't get any bookings. I just had to look at it that way. But now I'm playing all the time, so I've jumped in, you know, right into the fire. And it's hard, but I know I want to do this. So, you know, it's getting easier every week.
Well, we want you to do it because we enjoy your music and enjoy you. Knowing that you're behind, maybe now more people know a little bit more about Phil Ledbetter when he's sitting up there with that, up there with that dobro and understands what he's doing.
Well, I appreciate it. And like I said, you know, I'm going to do a couple of different albums, but there's another album I want to tell you about. I'm not going to really say a lot about it, but
right.
It's something we're working on. We're going to have... later this year, we're going to do an album, a Cancer Survivors album, and there's a lot of musicians, they're professional musicians that are cancer survivors that are going to be part of this. And I can mention, you know, a couple of them, Larry Cordell's one of them, Marty Raven's one of them, they're cancer survivors. And we've got some other guys, Wayne Taylor from Blue Highway, we've talked to him, and we've got the other positions filled out, so we're going to have a record that the whole core band is going to be cancer survivors.
Man.
And we were going to start on that back this past winter, not this winter, but fall. But it's funny, I told everybody, I said, I'm not a survivor yet, but once I am, you know, I'll be ready to do it. So I got cleared in December, so now I can legitimately put my picture on it, I think.
Well, listen, where are you going to be next? I don't want to do this whole thing. And of course, your website, it has everything on there. But tell them where you're going to be next while you're here.
Yeah, well, they can go always to UnclePhilOnline.com. Our Facebook /Phil Ledbetter and sign in. But my schedule's up my website. But this next week, we're going to be at the Down Home in Johnson City. Then we're going to be at Crofton, Maryland, that is a church there. It's the First Baptist Church, and actually where Wayne Taylor played with the Country Current, which was a United States Navy band.
Right.
That's his church, and he's got us coming there. And then we're playing at a theater in York, Pennsylvania the next day. So I don't remember what day those fall, if it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or if it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. But we're going to be there, and then big festivals, I think the next week or something like that, we're going to be at Joe Mullins Festival in Wilmington, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a big one, and then this summer we'll be at the Festival of Bluegrass in Lexington and Bean Blossom and Rhythm and Roots in Bristol. We're going to be at a lot of the big festivals, so I'm looking forward to being back and seeing everybody again.
Hey, Phil, when you get some of these projects on the way or in the can, so to speak, you'll come back and talk to us again?
You know that. We'll talk about them then.
Yeah.
And I'll be sure you get copies of all of them.
All right, buddy. Hey, listen, I'm going to let you go because I know you got other things to do, but I know one thing. Everybody has enjoyed you coming in. Phil Ledbetter, thanks so much, friend. God bless your heart, and thanks for blessing us today.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks to everybody for listening, and I sure appreciate you taking time to talk to me.
All right, man. We'll talk to you down the road.
You have a good one.
You too.
See you, Steve.
All right, bye. Well, I have nothing to say after that. We're going to play some music. Phil Ledbetter, what a great guy. Let's play some music, folks, can we, for a few minutes?
Hi, folks. This is Doyle Lawson with Doyle Lawson the Quicksilver, and you're listening to the other Steve Martin on Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass.